say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is the Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. That would be me, the newly unaffiliated Alan Jennings, that is. On May 28th, I walked out of CACLV as a civilian for the first time in more than 40 years. It felt like Jason McCord, now I'm dating myself, but he was Chuck Connors' character on the 1960s television western called Branded. But I'm still that guy, and I'm still disgusted by the abject immorality of so many of our leaders these days. Donald Trump is and long has been a liar. He lied to us constantly. That isn't up for debate. Now why some 40% of the American people somehow seem to like having the aberration whispering sweet lies into our ears is well beyond me. His lives have so many layers, so many manifestations, so many consequences. His constant attack on our election system is designed apparently to undermine our very democracy. This is a democracy, my friends, and in that sense, we are all Democrats. But if by no means is clean, it never has been. The original patriots did not give people of color a full vote. Women didn't get the right to vote until the 20th century. Landowners were one of the restrictions. But, you know, today, Little Idaho, mostly rural and almost entirely Republican, has the same number of senators as California. A fraction of our voters pick our elected representatives. What was it, 2,200 votes made the next mayor of Allentown in Matt Turk? The filibuster allows a minority of the minority of voters to block popular legislation. Well, at least the Bill of Rights, which constitutes the first 10 amendments to our Constitution, perhaps the greatest government document ever written, guarantees a free press. A free press includes holding the liars accountable to the truth. The First Amendment makes a special point about the importance of a free press to our democracy. This is the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. The very basis of our democracy is a so-called free press. Without it, there is no democracy. There is no rich, there's no poor, there's no black, there's no white, no right nor wrong. There would be essentially chaos, tyranny. There would be no truth. Fox News would be gleefully like a dog that just discovered that someone left the gate open, making it all up. We've got a problem, friends. I'm fairly certain that the patriots who crafted the Constitution and then amended it with the addition of those 10 amendments we call the Bill of Rights never imagined the internet, or for that matter, hedge funds. But the internet is taking the news business down, and a hedge fund is about to destroy access to a free press in a series of communities, including ours here in the Lehigh Valley, at least in its printed form. And in that printed form, there are appropriate self-policing guidelines, what we call the journalistic integrity. And I've been working with people in the news business for 40 years, and I can vouch for the integrity of the reporters throughout the Lehigh Valley. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I am indeed Alan Jennings still. My guests this evening are Kayla Dwyer. Kayla's a reporter with The Morning Call, just a few years in. Kayla, welcome.
Thank you.
How long have you been a reporter at The Morning Call?
This summer it'll be 4 years.
All right. We also have Mike Miarelli. Mike is the guy that runs the whole show. He's the editor-in-chief. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan.
You've been the editor-in-chief since, I think, David Erdman left, right?
I've been editor-in-chief since the pandemic.
Okay. Oh, man. You've had a tough one, huh?
I took over in February of 2020, and, of course, the pandemic struck in March of 2020.
And you were a reporter for a number of years in the newsroom at the Morning Call, correct?
I actually came to Morning Call as a sports editor and became Metro editor, which is the local news, in charge of local news, in 2000. So I've been in the local news for over 20 years at the Morning Call.
Well, tonight we're going to talk about the institution in this country that holds the liars accountable, and that's the free press. We're going to talk about the Morning Call's almost certain demise, given what happened to it in the last few weeks, which we're going to talk about in some detail. I'm going to be in a strange position. I was in the middle of this fray. I try to get in the middle of almost all the frays that are important to the region, and I was in the middle of this one. And so host becomes guest, guest host. Kayla, you want to take over for me and ask the questions? We can do it that way. but this is a little bit unusual. This is not me being host all the way through, because I had a role in this conversation. It was we failed, which I guess is clear now. But I did have a role in this whole thing. So Kayla, let's start with you. How did you get the news about Alden and its intent to acquire the Tribune? I mean, at what point did you realize, oh my God, we're in trouble?
Well, I think it all started back in 2019 when Alden Global Capital bought some of Tribune Publishing stock, and it quickly grew to, I think, somewhere around a third of Tribune stock, which made them the largest shareholder. So this is late 2019. Our union was just, oh gosh, I guess under a year old. And we knew this name, this Alden Global Capital name. It's actually been under several previous names, such as Digital First Media, News Group. We knew this name because a investigative reporter hired by the News Guild had started, you know, digging into this shadowy, mysterious company's business practices for several years before this company bought some stock in Tribune. And so we knew that their business model included slashing and burning. And we also could kind of tell, I mean, based on their, increasing financial stake in our company, that ownership was not far off on the horizon. Back then in 2019 is when we sort of started coming together as guilds across the Tribune company. There's a lot of us, there's 9 or 10, and started thinking, what could we possibly do? This is a company that kind of has wreaked havoc on places like the Denver Post, several newspapers in Pennsylvania, and what power could we possibly have? And we started to formulate a strategy that was kind of multi-pronged. A big part of it was raising the profile of this problem of hedge funds gobbling up local news sources for the sake of extracting very large profit margins. And we wanted to get out in front of it and explain to our communities, you know, we don't know what is going to happen here, but there are some worst case scenarios that we should be aware of and try to mobilize against. So there was a big public awareness campaign. But then, you know, there was also, how do we start getting people with resources in our local communities to start thinking about this seriously and thinking about how they can step in and change the direction of things? And also, we wanted to make sure those people, whoever they might be, have a similar vision that we do, which is transforming our legacy newspapers into some sort of different model that doesn't have to prioritize profits and can serve communities better and can reinvest into the journalism and the journalists. You know, before Alden came in, Tribune and corporations that own newspapers everywhere around the country have been cutting and cutting and cutting over the years. I mean, this is certainly not a new problem. And we just now, you know, after having organized our newsrooms, we just wanted to use our power some way. And I would say we made a lot of inroads. I think a lot of the public still maybe doesn't know what's going on, but certainly more do than they did before. I think you can't Google Alden without seeing the various nomenclatures attached, the various epithets, you know, from destroyer of newspapers to vulture, hedge fund, et cetera, et cetera. So we definitely raised the public profile, and it started before this ownership question came on the horizon.
Okay, let me go to Mike for a second now. Mike, you're the top guy in the newsroom. I guess your title is called the editor-in-chief. But for those who don't understand the news business, how it works, the publisher stays clear of editorial, right? I mean, publisher right. walking through the newsroom is almost like a faux pas. You know, that the publisher runs the business and not the newsroom. Has that changed given, you know, the role, you know, that the newspaper is part of a larger chain? I mean, how does the business versus the politics and so on work these days?
Well, to be honest, the publisher role at the Morning Call, we had publishers all the way up through, I don't know, maybe 2000. And then Tribune went to a publisher editor-in-chief model. So that blurred the lines, to be honest. The publisher was also the first one for that was David Erdman was the first publisher and editor-in-chief. He was the editor and then they became publisher right. when they went to this new model. They have since abandoned that model. We did have a publisher editor-in-chief. The last one we had was Robert York, who went to become the editor-in-chief of the Daily News. But the publisher editor-in-chief model is still there, still a couple like that, but it's very, that's a pretty fine line you're walking there, because a publisher, his basic job is to make sure that the newspaper makes money.
And, right.
Well, the editor's job is not even close to that. The editor's job is to make sure that we're reporting news as fairly and seriously as possible. So that's a real dichotomy there. So that that model is actually kind of a, I think Tribune might be the only one that does that. I don't know if anybody else does that. So, but you're right. The publisher walking through the newsroom, probably not as much of an issue as, let's say, the advertising VP walking through the newsroom.
Right.
But the publisher definitely ran the business and stayed out of it. Hopefully stayed out of it.
So your experience with learning about and understanding the Alden threat, if you will, and I want to give both Mike and Kayla a lot of credit for being on this show, because they've got, you know, they don't know what's going to come of their futures. And I feel bad for both of them, because I think they've both done a great job in their respective work. But so, Mike, how is your learning about this maybe different from Kayla's and what you're able to do in response to it?
Well, I differ a little bit, only that, and I do agree with Kayla, the Guild's definitely raised awareness of all of them. And I think my awareness, my take on this is that the newspaper business, especially the print business, has been in decline for a long time. And as the business has declined, there were a lot of cuts made. We're not the only one. Most newspapers have made cuts. There are a few who have done pretty well for different reasons, but most newspapers have made cuts. So over the years, Tribune has done the same thing. I mean, honestly, we had, in 2005, we had 210 people in the movement. Today, we have 45.
Wow.
And that's before all of it. So this is not a new thing. I don't look at it as, and I know the stories about Alden and everything else, but I think Tribune, any publishing company nowadays, they look at the bottom line. Back in the days when we had 210 people in the newsroom, that was a very healthy bottom line, and it never really varied. What happened was, and you talk about the internet, I actually kind of differ with you on that, Alan, a little bit. I think the internet is not going to ruin, is not the reason for any ruination. It did start it because, say, Craigslist, for example. Mm-hmm. They came in, and all of a sudden, all the classified ads that we had, which were very lucrative, they were putting them up for free. And so that really cut into classified advertising, which was a big hit to our revenue and our bottom line. The internet, though, could be our salvation. You've heard me talk about this ad nauseum. But our digital subscriptions are up. That's the future for us. The reader revenue is, newspapers have traditionally survived on circulation revenue, that's print, and advertising revenue. But now there's a new thing where it's a reader revenue. So we have digital subscribers who pay for our content. We think they should pay for the content because we pay good people like Kayla, who's an excellent reporter, to produce this content. So I always liken it to, if you go to Wegmans and you buy produce, you expect to pay for that produce. You don't expect to get it for free. Somebody put that produce there. Somebody worked to get that produce there. And Wegmans is paying someone to put their produce on display. we're producing content, and we think you should be able, you should pay for that. So digital subscriptions, and I think it's a very reasonable rate. Our digital is our future, and we've done pretty well with it. We need more subscription, of course, but we think that content's worth it. That's the future for us.
You know,
I've seen a lot of changes. I mean, it's definitely a change, and it's not nearly the print revenue still outpaces the digital revenue, but we're talking, if you're talking future of newspapers, digital revenue.
Well, in the Morning Call, I think it's commonly understood by those of us who pay attention. The Morning Call has pretty much from the beginning, since it was sold by Donald Miller years ago, been a profit center in the chains that it's been a part of. And my understanding is to the tune currently in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 million a year profit. So, Mike, to what do you attribute the Morning Call's success in this market relative to so many other newspapers that are struggling to survive in their markets?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is this is a very reader-friendly market. People always grab it. Our penetration, even today in print, is still pretty high. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's pretty high compared to most newspapers now. I mean, a bigger metro like Chicago Tribune does not have near the penetration rate we have. When penetration means, just means the number of households who are reading the newspaper daily basis or even a weekly basis compared to the total number of households, and you get a penetration rate. So that's number one. I just think we have a very, people want to hear the news. They want to see the news. They want to know what's going on in the communities, and they want to know that somebody's keeping an eye on things. So I think that's helped us quite a bit. I think people see the value in the advertising in the Morning Call yet, digitally and in print. So I think those combined to give us a pretty healthy bottom line. And honestly, Alan, like I mentioned before, we've traditionally been very budget conscious. We don't spend money frivolously, and we certainly don't waste money. So I think that we just run the business correctly, I think, in that regard.
You're listening to WDIY. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Tonight's guests are Kayla Dwyer, a reporter for The Morning Call, and her boss, actually her boss's boss's boss, Mike Miarelli, the editor-in-chief of The Morning Call. We're going to take a quick break and hope you'll join us on the other side. Stick with us.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown, listener-supported public radio.
We're back. Thanks for sticking around. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, the newly unaffiliated Alan Jennings, the guy looking for trouble in all the right places, hopefully. One of them clearly here is The Morning Call. I think part of the reason why The Morning Call has done well relative to other newspapers is because this is a community that has a sense of community, and when you have a sense of community, you want to know what's going on in your community. I think The Morning Call has hired a slew of great reporters over the years. And I've got to admit, I'm a fan of the newspaper. So let's get into the anatomy of an attempt to save the newspaper with the third largest circulation in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Let's go back to Kayla, who, by the way, was active in bringing a union back into the Morning Call's newsroom. And it takes guts right there. Kayla's a pretty tough-as-nails kind of reporter, while still somehow trying to be a nice person. So that's not an easy thing to do, Kayla. What did you guys, we set this up earlier on your reaction to it, and how did you lead this from here?
Yeah, so I would say about a year ago is when we, and when I say we, I mean my guild colleagues, not just at the Morning Call, but across other guilds and Tribune, we started brainstorming how we might go about seeing what interest exists in the community that we serve for returning our newspapers to local ownership or local control. And because, you know, as Mike pointed out, you know, this is not a new problem, the cutting down of staff for the sake of making profit off of a declining revenue source. This has been going on for a really long time. And so, you know, the problem is not just Alden, it's the whole business model. And so our approach has been, like, who can we try to reach out to in our communities who might be connected to people with influence, people with money, to help us reimagine this? So teams of us started doing this outreach. We started in some obvious places. And I do want to mention that our outreach has, among our local elected officials, has been bipartisan. You know, none of this has been a partisan effort at all. And the people that we've tried to reach out to who we think are well connected in the community, it's simply been about reinvigorating our fourth estate. That's been our, very much our concentrated focus. So, you know, we started, I don't know how many names I want to name drop, but one of the people we did reach out to was you, Alan. You know, you're very well connected in the community, and you might know who could have interest in this sort of thing. In at first, it was buying the Morning Call from either Tribune or the wealthy Baltimore hotel owner, billionaire, who wanted to buy Tribune before Alden swooped in. At first, it was a conversation about that, because this Baltimore billionaire said that his intentions were to buy the whole chain and sell off the individual properties to local community-minded investors who wanted to bring back their newspapers to local control. Whether it's a nonprofit model or, you know, another LLC, you know, that's something that can be worked out. We have ideas for models we would like to see, but, you know, the first hurdle is finding the interest. So, Alan, you were a key person who really got things mobilized for a minute there. And I, you know, I think you're selling yourself short when you say it failed. I don't think any of this was a failure. I think raising the profile of this need to rally around our local newspapers is a win. You know, and if there is, there are efforts that prevail to return the newspaper to some sort of local set of owners. I think the profile of this among the community is really important, because any journalist who's been rescued by a rich person will tell you, you can't just rely on them to do well by you. You know, you need that community support in place, that accountability structure in place. So I don't know how much you want to say about your efforts, Alan, but...
I don't know if you remember, the first thing I said to you was, what took you so long to get to me?
Yeah, I know.
So what I did, this is where I kick into, you know, not host mode, but more like guest mode. What I felt we needed to do was we needed to get some of the right people in the room, people with some substantial resources, people whose resources are significant enough that they could afford to lose some money doing something good and right for their community. And I don't think any of us who understand the news media and understand how a community fits into a larger context, like a state or nation, appreciates really the value of the news media. And so I got some people together who have very philanthropic interests and would understand the importance of a newspaper being viable in our community. I'm not going to name names because that would be, I don't think it would be appropriate, but we got several of those individuals in the room. We also had the publisher of a former publisher of a newspaper. We had the former editor-in-chief of the newspaper, a newspaper. We had the gentleman who runs an integrated public television and radio system at that table, and we began to go about the process of trying to figure out how to do this. And what this meant was basically save the newspaper. Personally, I wanted a newspaper that was profitable, because in my judgment, the best community development program is called a profit. And I'm a social entrepreneur, and my feeling is that if you can make money solving problems, there wouldn't be any problems. And so in my mind, unlike the Inquirer, which had gone to nonprofit status and needed a substantial philanthropic subsidy to sustain the paper, my hope was that we would find some investors who would do this for the right reason and somehow make it work, but not consider it to be a disaster if it didn't. And we got pretty far. We had several million dollars committed. We spoke directly to Stuart Bynum at the Maryland philanthropist that Kayla, you mentioned. And so the Tribune really didn't serve us well. Not only were they selling it to a creepy entity, but they were also not willing to sell it in pieces. So we couldn't just buy the Morning Call. Stuart Bynum could not just buy the Baltimore Sun. And keep in mind, this is a newspaper chain that includes the Hartford Courant, Newsday, the Orlando Sentinel, the Morning Call, Baltimore Sun, and other newspapers. These are a lot of communities that are going to be disempowered in terms of their news content every day. The short story is the deal was difficult to make work. We also heard rumors that a prominent business individual whose name would be recognized by almost everybody listening was also interested in the newspaper. He was interested solely from a sentimental perspective, wanting the newspaper to be the newspaper. Any of us who understand the power of the press are appalled at the idea that this community would be without a newspaper. And if Alden gets this newspaper, we're in trouble. Now, Mike, when you and I talked on the phone a week or two ago, you had a different perspective. You thought that a newspaper that's doing well would be sustained, and why would they mess with success? Is that Mike Miarelli the optimist? Is that Mike Miarelli the realist? Is that Mike Miarelli the crazy guy who has no idea, what reality is?
It might be a combination of all three, Alan. I don't know. Taylor's heard me talk about this, and maybe I fully admit maybe I'm crazy, but I look at some of the newspapers that Alden's had, and if you take the 6 Pennsylvania newspapers, for instance, they bought Reading out of bankruptcy for $5 million, right now. You think about that. So $5 million for a newspaper that probably, when I worked there in the late 80s, the 90s, that paper was probably worth $30, $40 million back then, maybe more. But what happened there was, and I've talked to some Alden folks about this, what happened there was, the way it was described to me, was it was a family-owned newspaper. And the first generation made a lot of money. The second generation lost all the money, and the third generation sold it. And they did a lot of things in Reading that they didn't do a lot of things that they should have done as far as expense and cuts and making sure that the bottom line stays healthy. That's not like the Morning Call has done all that over the years, and much of it was very painful, honestly. But we did a lot of that stuff where the Reading Eagle did not. So the Alden papers in Pennsylvania are not all that healthy to start with. I think that's where this vulture mentality comes in with Alden, that they just didn't even start picking over bones. Well, the Morning Call is not in that situation. It hasn't been for quite some time. That's why I'm a little more optimistic, and Taylor's heard this from me. We're having a very good year right now. I mentioned before, do this subscription, we're doing better than we ever have. More people are reading our paper every day. So we're in a different situation than Reading was, and some of the other newspapers and things. Now, I could be crazy about that. I'm a little more optimistic about that because I know what we have in our office, our staff. And I just think that the way we've run things over here, we've done it correctly. We've done it smartly. And maybe I'm crazy, and maybe Alden's just going to come in and run roughshod. I just don't see that happening because of how we run things.
Yeah, I have long said that I'm cynical enough to know what I'm up against, but optimistic enough to pick the fight anyway. That's just me, and so we'll see how this goes. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We're talking about our newspaper, the Lehigh Valley's Morning Call, and the threat to the newspaper given the acquisition of the Tribune chain by a hedge fund group called Alden. My guests are Kayla Dwyer, who is a reporter for the Morning Call and active in the union in the newsroom, and the editor-in-chief, Mike Miarelli. So we looked at the business side of this transaction, and you know, one of the problems is that there are what they call shared services that need to be considered, where newspapers, you know, have cut back things like, you know, their own printing presses. The Morning Call doesn't print their own newspaper anymore. It gets printed in, I think, Newark. And how do you absorb those costs, which are essentially stranded costs in a typical business type of setting, and still make it work? And plus, you know, the news industry is changing radically, and spending a lot of money buying a newspaper might not be the smartest thing many investors think would be a good use of their money. So without getting into the gory details, we abandoned the effort to try to acquire the paper. We instead, you know, kind of privately hoped that Stuart Bynum would be able to get the Tribune before Alden did. And Kayla, that's where we get into a different strategy now. And you want to talk about what you tried to do at the point of the shareholder consideration of this incredibly weighty development in communities throughout the country.
So when the Stuart Bynum deal or potential deal fell through because a significant source of his capital dropped out, we turned our immediate attention to the upcoming vote by the shareholders of Tribune to approve the acquisition offer from Alden, which was, gosh, late May or so. There was hope to influence the vote. I think we kept our realities in check, you know, knowing how shareholders operate. You know, we tried to, the News Guild had put together basically like white papers making the dollars and cents argument for shareholders to vote no, that this is, you know, a bad business deal, that Alden was undervaluing the company, which was true for a while. I think it ended up not being true the day of, but someone will have to correct me on that. And then, of course, we also made an ethical appeal. We, meaning some of us among the News Guild, penned a letter explaining, you know, the ethical, the moral reasons why this deal should not be approved, what this means for local communities potentially. And I want to emphasize potentially because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, we've tried to stop short of saying this will, like, you know, using absolute terms, this will do X, Y, Z to the Morning Call. We can point very conclusively to Alden's track record at previous newspapers, and the amount of cash it likes to extract to funnel into other poorly performing investments. But, you know, we can't say what's going to happen, but we can make an argument for what could happen and what it would mean to our communities, which is really quite devastating if the worst case scenario pans out. So, you know, we made that ethical appeal and got recruited a bunch of organizations and big names, including representatives across the spectrum from our local communities. And by that, I mean Lehigh Valley, Chicago, the various communities that make up the Tribune Guild. And, you know, posted it to the EDGAR database, the SEC database where shareholders look for information before making a financial decision. Posted both of those on there, hoped for the best. You know, I think we knew what was going to happen. So our efforts now turn to continuing the effort toward finding more people who are willing to still give this a go. I mean, Alden doesn't have a great track record of selling off individual properties, you know, so there's a lot of complicating factors here to continue our work. But, you know, I can say there are efforts underway that provide me a little bit of hope. And actually, some of that has been covered in the Morning Call. you know, there was a Bitter Sea back in the day before the sale was complete to Alden. And, you know, that source provides a little bit of hope for our efforts. So that's about all I can say, but I don't think anything's a done deal yet.
So, okay, I guess when we get down to it, so my understanding was the mercury in Pottstown went from some two dozen reporters to one. Is that, did I understand that properly?
Correctly? Well, it was, they have one news reporter. I think they have like a sports reporter and an editor as well. In something like 2012, they had, the Pottstown Mercury had something like 70-something journalists. In 2017, it was down to the teens, and there's a handful now. I can tell you, we calculated all these numbers across all the Pennsylvania newspapers under the Alden's other name of Media News Group from 2012. So there were, you know, among union-represented employees across these three newspapers in Pennsylvania owned by Media News, that number went from 230 people in 2012 to 39 people this past year. And, you know, it's this business model. It's, you know, trying to get a significant cash flow from these companies, no matter what their starting point is, I think, and in order to invest that cash flow into other investments that aren't doing well. So it's investing these profits into other companies, not into the newsroom. So, you know, I think that the key thing here is, again, we don't know what's going to happen. I am, you know, I'm really glad that someone like Mike Murelli thinks that, you know, maybe there is hope because we already are doing well. I really, really hope that to my bones. I think from our perspective, you know, our job, I guess, is to be the pessimist, and we're just trying to rally up awareness and support in the event of a worst-case scenario.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are Kayla Dwyer, reporter for The Morning Call, and Mike Miarelli, the editor-in-chief of The Morning Call, a newspaper that I think would be fair to say is in a bit of trouble, and I think with it, this entire community. You know, it raises the question of who will cover the townships and the school districts, who will cover the unscrupulous businesses, who will shine a light on those who take a break from the fundamentals of sunshine and good government rules, who will go after the predatory businesses that feed on our neighbors' gullibility. So we're going to continue to talk about this. There are additional elements to discuss. We're going to take a quick break, a typical WDIY break. Stick around. We'll see us on the other side.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Galactic Travels brings you hour-long soundscapes of electronic, ambient, and space music. That's Thursday night at 11, right here on WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. Many choices, real voices.
All right, welcome back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I'm here to cause trouble. I appreciate the radio station giving me the opportunity. Speaking of the radio station, hey, there's James Johnson over there. James is the news director. He's the guy that doesn't let me sound too stupid when I say stupid things. Very much appreciate his help and his partnership in delivering what I think is important stuff to the best, smartest radio listeners in Lehigh Valley. So, okay, so Alden wasted no time. They fired the Tribune CEO, within about 10 minutes of the shareholders approving the transaction?
Yeah. Well, he left. I don't know that we can say fired.
He left, okay.
No, I think he might have been. I think he was contractors terminated.
Okay.
Let go.
And to be fair, he was the only one who voted against it. So he kind of knew he was out the door.
Well, and I don't know if you caught the euphemism that our editor-in-chief just used, which was, how did you say it again? You said his contract was
contract
not...
Contract was terminated.
Yeah, there you go.
By the way, do you know why he voted against it?
Because he liked his job?
No, because he stated this publicly that he thought that Alden was undervaluing. He thought the future of the company was in much better shape than with it.
Under his leadership.
Shareholder price. Yeah, but he was looking at the future with all the digital subscriptions I mentioned before and seeing that the possibilities were much brighter than the $17.25 they were offering.
Well, so, the previous owners of the Morning Call have gone to the newsroom and plucked dozens of people out and said, hey, we'll pay you to get out. You wouldn't do that, right? Because, how can anybody know what their alternative was? But we've lost a lot of reporters over the years that way. My understanding is they're already talking new buyouts, right? I mean, how do you have anybody besides maybe Tony Salamone, who is, an old hand reporter? I mean, Kayla's, for crying out loud, only 3 or 4 years in. She's 25 years old. She's got a great education. She's a damn good reporter. Are they going to offer to buyouts to people who have been there for, as short a time as Kayla? Do you know, Mike?
Yeah, there is a buyout offer, and it's open to everybody. You're right. Tony is probably one of our more veteran reporters. We have a fair amount of reporters who I would say are, 10 years, which is pretty veteran. We have a pretty good staff right now, very good staff. So, there aren't a lot of reporters that have been there for 40 years. Keith Thriller is one of them. He's been there since 1979. He's still here.
This whole idea of the buyout option. What happens if you decline? Do they eliminate your position? Do you have any idea what happens if you decline?
No.
Do they keep you?
Or even decline if
the buyout?
You decline. No, if I don't. Do you mean if they decline? If the staff declines the buyout, or
right? Are you saying that here's your option: take it or leave it? Is that the way it is?
No. It's basically you have to say whether if you want to be part of the buyout.
Right, okay.
But if you don't say you're part of the buyout, you're still with the paper.
Right, okay. All right. So, as a student of Russian history, pre-revolution history, it just sounds like that Soviet approach, where they beat you until you admit you're guilty and then beat you because you admitted you were guilty. I feel terrible for you guys. I mean, I've known so many reporters and so many that are still there. I don't want to put you in the category of, you're going to stand in line for food assistance or anything, but, where does this all end, really? I mean, the American people have signaled their willingness to accept lies, right? I started the show by talking about the president's lying. It seems to me that the American people seem okay in accepting the lies that they want to hear. So, where do you think this? I mean, do you ever, stay up late at night, eyes wide open, staring at the dark ceiling, and try to figure out, what happens to our world when these things play themselves out? I mean, what do you do? What do we do as a society, as a people, as a civilization, in response to essentially the denial of key information about our lives, so that we can make good decisions about our lives?
I don't know if I stay awake thinking about this, but I do worry about the proliferation of low information voters, people who who don't read the paper and are kind of proud of not reading the paper because they think they're biased or liberal, or even some people think they're too conservative. But I do worry about people not wanting to know the other side of the story. And they just want to hear their side of the story. And I think that has led to some people will vilify the paper or any media outlet that doesn't give them the information that they think they should have. And that is probably my biggest worry about this country. We don't want to hear the other side. And these papers traditionally have tried to give both sides. And I think that's a big loss. And we just don't hear the other side anymore. And don't want to hear the other side. And so if newspapers report both sides, well, you're biased one way or another.
I think no matter how crazy your thoughts are, there is going to be some website somewhere that's going to reinforce, mm-hmm. It's going to give you a home with your crazy thoughts, right? And, you know, whether it's QAnon or any of these crazy, you know, the Proud Boys and all these other crazy people who are fundamentally anti-American, somehow claiming to be American, the truth is becoming an elusive concept, you know? I mean, what is a fact? We can't even agree on the facts anymore because there's some news outlet that is going to say, those aren't the facts, these are the facts, right? So how do you even determine what a so-called fact is? And, you know, in an environment where you can make it up and somebody's going to give you reinforcement that indeed you're right. There is, you know, the crazy is normal and normal is crazy. You know what I mean?
I can respond in part to that. I mean, I think a big part of where, well, first of all, you know, cable, the fissure that is cable news has contributed a lot to this schism. But on the ground level, I do think some of the mistrust in local media, like nationally, has a little bit to do with feeling disconnected to maybe the people who make it, the people who report these facts and try to get to the truth of things. I think, you know, journalists and journalism institutions could do well to try to connect with their communities more, be more visible, show that, you know, we are human beings who really care about the truth and really care about supporting our democracy with it. We don't have an agenda that serves anything but our communities. And convincing the masses of that is a really big task. And for, you know, part of it is doing it through our work. And maybe we have to consider other ways to do that convincing. But I do want to say that even with, you know, hedge funds making their way through the news business, I don't think that this means the demise of the fourth estate by any stretch. I think journalism will always reinforce itself in just different ways. Like, you know, my family members are always like, why are you in print journalism? It's dying. But I strongly disagree that it's dying. I think it's evolving. It has to change. Some of the ways we fund journalism probably will have to change. And there are a lot of really smart people working on this problem we're talking about. There's hope legislatively. You know, Steve Waldman at Report for America has been advocating for a legislative changes that would support a replanting strategy, you know, providing financial incentives for companies like hedge funds to get out of the news business and replant those newsrooms into, say, nonprofit models or community trust models. And this is, you know, there are plenty of examples out there of ways that, you know, newsrooms can be reinvented. And there's, you know, all of us who go into journalism do it because we believe so hard in this mission, this public serving mission. And, you know, that doesn't just go away. Those people are here to stay. And whatever shape shifting we have to do, we're going to do it. So, you know, my voice is shaking because I'm really passionate about this. But I just think, you know, we have no choice but to figure out our way through this, not lay down, which is another big reason why, you know, us in the guild that we've been doing whatever, using whatever tools we have in our boxes to try to do something. We can't, you know, we just felt like even if ultimately we didn't win against this hedge fund, you know, at least we tried. We can't just not try, you know. And I think that's the story of journalism, is we're always going to try. Even if there's resistance from the public, we're always going to try.
Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. There has got to be a public policy issue in here, or public policy solution, right? Because we have a law in place somehow that allows anybody, regardless of their motives, their politics, their perspective, to buy a newspaper chain and radically change the flow of information, whether it's honest or dishonest, real or unreal. And that, I would argue, is an abridge of the right to a free press. So it strikes me as, you know, as an issue that we ought to be able to pursue. Maybe it's, you know, it's probably too late in the case of the Lehigh Valley, but for other communities, it may not be. But what do you think of that last point? You know, the fact that the law allows Alden to do what they're doing is, and it's in a respect, is an abridgment of the freedom of the press that the First Amendment doesn't allow for, right? So
yes, and on that note, you know, I do think a reason to try to engage our legislators on this and raise the profile of this problem, and we've certainly done that. On the other hand, of course, you know, you get the government too involved in saving the press, and there's ethical issues there. You know, there's always, no matter which way you turn, there's going to be questions of how do we maintain our independence. And there's certainly plenty of examples out there of structures that both rely on community support and public funding, but still maintain their editorial independence. Like, people do it. But it is a question, you know, if we do something legislatively en masse, it is a careful conversation we'd have to have.
Mike, what do you do next? What is the editor-in-chief who's in a weird spot, man? You've got to balance, you know, the business with the editorial. You've got employees that you need to do the job. Where do you, Mike Miarelli, go from here?
Well, I think I think of it as the newsroom. Where we go from here, we have the we're faced with these buyouts. So first of all, we have to see what shakes out after that. And after that, we're going to have to, as I said to the staff, we're going to have to reinvent ourselves again if it's necessary. We've done it many times, gone through a few of these now. And I think somebody mentioned today this is the fifth time we're doing this with buyouts. Wow. So, and this is the, you know, so that's two over Tribune and one with Alden. So every time we've reinvented ourselves, we have to, you know, there's some things you just have to do. We have a very talented staff, and I think we'll be able to do it, but it's, you know, it's never easy. That's the next thing, the next hurdle we have to overcome. And as I said before, we're focused on digital subscriptions and real revenue and trying to help to tell the story of the Lehigh Valley, and we're going to continue to do that.
And you don't see yourself heading out to Jamaica to sell, you know, chestnuts on the beach, right?
Not yet, no.
Okay. Kayla, what are you thinking? Is your resume dusted off? Are you expecting that they recognize how good a reporter you are and keep you around? What's next?
Well, I intend to, you know, stick around and help out as long as I can. You know, I think what Mike said is absolutely right. You know, it's like I said earlier, we just have to reinvent. What he said, we have to reinvent ourselves a little bit, but we're always going to keep doing that, you know, as long as we possibly can. And I'm, you know, here for that discussion. So, you know, it's just kind of a mold as we go right now.
You've been listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests have been Mike Miarelli, the editor-in-chief of The Morning Call, and Kayla Dwyer, reporter for The Morning Call. Thanks to both of you for being part of this. We hope that The Morning Call survives. We think you are critical to the quality of life in this community, and thanks so much. We'll be back next month, and hopefully with good stuff to talk about for once. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Kayla.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for being the smartest listeners in the Lehigh Valley. Good night.